This is Stephen Adams.
And this is Kevin Durant.
You Kevin Durant, mate? Good to see you, mate. Different complexion.
Okay, let's go. Right.
So, this is Stephen Adams.
And this is Enes Kanter.
You're listening to the Down to Earth...
Down to Dunk podcast.
What? Down to Dunk.
Down to Dunk.
I'll say that.
Dunk.
Introduce yourself, mate.
Here's Stephen Adams, and I'm Enes Kanter.
And you're listening to Down to Dunk podcast.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht, and with me today, Hot Ham Wednesday, John Ham. John, what's up?
Man, I'm just super psyched about the Philadelphia 76ers tonight. I mean, get to see finally Rashawn Holmes.
Yes, the legendary Rashawn Holmes and Dario Saric. I've heard that it's pronounced Saric. Have you heard that?
I have heard that too, and I've tried to do that.
And nobody will do it. I think everybody's very afraid too.
But yet, Sam Presti will still pronounce it as Alex Arenish.
I know.
So that's where I'm. So I'm a little uncertain on everything.
Yes. I get that from my source, Mikey Barra, who lives in Italy, who covers like EuroLeague and all that stuff. And so he actually sent me a recording of him saying it because I asked him, I was like, how do you say this?
I forgot where I came across that, but apparently there's actually an accent over the first S.
Yeah.
And so that's where somewhere I stumbled across that. That's actually a shh sound.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But anyway, I'm just psyched because the season opened being introduced to Joel Embiid. And now here we are towards the end of the season. And finally, we get Rashawn Holmes.
That's right.
So.
Oh, I hope the Thunder play better than they did on Monday against the Warriors.
That was
so brutal, man.
That was. And I mean, honestly, if I'm Billy Donovan, like I try to my best to hide what Philadelphia's record is.
Yes.
And I try to make it sound like that they're like a division leader or something. Because I could very well see this team go, it's Philadelphia. Let's go have fun rather than actually come out and do the defensive stuff that they need to do to actually put this team away.
You have to take them seriously. I mean, as kind of dumb as that may sound, like this team plays hard and they're going to do the best that they can, which when TJ McConnell's your starting point guard, it's not always the best thing in the world. No disrespect to TJ, but the Thunder should roll this team if they're playing even like 70% of what they're capable of. And they should roll this team, and this should be a game where Russ rests in the fourth quarter.
It should be. But again, I mean, they do that against Toronto, but they don't do that against Brooklyn, or at least not in the first half. So
that's just the nature of this team. Because I mean, you look at their 5-game winning streak, and you're like projecting out from there, and you're like, oh man, Western Conference Finals. Like I said that word way too many, that phrase way too many times after their 5-game win streak, and now I'm like, well, it should put up a good first round series. You know, I mean, that's just like the nature of this Thunder team. Like they're so up and down. I do want to mention that we are
the fan base, by the way. So
yeah, for sure. I do want to mention that we are a part of dailythunder.com. And then also we're proud to announce that we are part of Almighty Baller Radio. So you can go to almightyballer.com and check out all the podcasts there. They have a podcast for every team. And some really good stuff. They're weekly shows typically. So go check that out. And you can check us out on dailythunder.com and then also at almightyballer.com. John, I have an idea that I sent to you over the course of a couple of days where I wanted to do a retrospective on the draft picks that Sam Presti has made. So everybody talks about like what a good drafter he is. And, you know, we really trust Sam Presti because of his drafts. And I just wanted to like take like a closer look at it and see exactly what he's done. And we have ranked all the players that Sam Presti has drafted and put them into tiers, and we are going to discuss. So John and I gave John his list. I don't know what his list looks like now that he's put them in a different order. We're going to start at the top and then go to the bottom. So John, who's your number one the best pick that Sam Price has ever made.
Yeah, and so you know, we talked about this, putting him into tiers. I'm mixing my sports metaphors here. Okay. I've actually got my tiers in baseball terms.
Okay.
So, yeah, the best player I have, obviously, is Kevin Durant, which falls in the Grand Slam tier.
Okay. I think there are – if there are Grand Slams, there are three of them. And this may sound just incredibly biased, and maybe it is, but here I'm going to give you reasons why I pick Russ as the number one draft pick. Because Kevin Durant was kind of a no-brainer pick.
Right.
It was Durant and Oden. And Oden got picked first, so Durant goes two. Like, it was just a no-brainer pick. It wasn't – like, every general manager would have made that pick. So Russ went fourth in – I remember the mock draft that was put out on ESPN that day had Russ going like 6, 7, 8, or 9. Like all the mock drafts like had Russ down there. I think Chad Ford settled on him.
Going
to New York.
Not anymore. Chad Ford's corrected that now.
That's true. You look back and he's number one, right? He was supposed to go to the Bulls.
That's right.
They picked the wrong guy. Oh, that's a great Chad Ford drop. But yeah, they took him four. Kevin Love was picked after him. Gallinari, who was also highly touted. Eric Gordon. Like, all those guys were thought to go up there. I wanted Jared Bayless, if you want to know what I thought, which was really dumb. He went 11th to the Pacers. He was another guy. I think that a lot of people had Jared Bayless there because he was a better shooter. They thought that he could play point guard next to Kevin Durant. People didn't think Russell was a point guard. They thought he was basically like super Tony Allen coming out of college. And he kind of was. So
Pac-10 Defensive Player of the Year.
Right. So I just give Sam Presti and his team so much credit. Because think about what this team would look like right now had they selected Gallinari, had they selected Jared Bayless, had they selected Eric Gordon. I mean.
Or Brook Lopez.
Or Brook Lopez, yeah. That was another guy. Yeah, he was another guy that was linked to OKC at the time and then continuously linked to OKC up until the Kanter trade. I just think that was such a pivotal pick for this team because there were like Gallo's good, Kevin Love's good, Eric Gordon's good, Brook Lopez is good, but they are not superstars. And they are, and maybe you could say Kevin Love is, but Kevin Love's not on the same level as Russell Westbrook. I just think that pick was not a no-brainer. There was even a little bit of a reach on draft night. So those are all the reasons why I go Westbrook. Even though I think that Kevin Durant has been the best player in Thunder franchise history, I still think that that pick in particular was just such a gutsy move at the time and is paying dividends almost 10 years later.
And that's, you know, probably I should have thought that out before I hurriedly threw these guys in order. And just to kind of remind people, the story there is apparently the then Sonics were looking at Brook Lopez or Russell Westbrook, and it was analytics, you know, those pesky analytics that everyone craps on. It was analytics. They went back and looked at Russell Westbrook, who played point guard that year because Darren Collison was hurt and was out for a few games, and Russ slid over and played point. And it was Ben Alomar, who was a consultant at the time, who now is like the director of analytics at ESPN, I think. You know, he's the one that, you know, obviously kind of brought to light that, yeah, we think he can play point guard. And then they factored in that, you know, obviously the characteristics of Russ they liked. They thought that point guard could be more impactful in the league than a big man. And that all led to the decision to draft Russell Westbrook. So just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's an incredible pick, and I think the best one. Kevin Durant, I have too, just because his impact on the franchise, he's the second best player in the league. Some people may think he's better than LeBron. I still don't think he's really proven that. But he's definitely number two from the 2007 draft. And then number three.
And honestly, I put KD number one because he's got the MVP.
You know, sure.
I understand that. Clearly, he was one of the top two picks in that draft, but we've had a lot of guys over the years that have been quote unquote no brainers that, you know, didn't pan out for one reason or another. So
sure.
there was a lot of concern about Durant. Remember, he couldn't bench press, what, 185, I think. Yeah. The basketball skill was there, but, you know, I think that's probably where I nudged a little bit. Like you said, best player in Thunder history, and he has an MVP in his cabinet.
Yeah, I think, and that makes sense too. Michael Beasley was the no-brainer pick, number two pick in the 2009 draft, right?
if you think Chicago Bulls fans are mad, right?
2008. People are going to ding me on that. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Like if I was running the Bulls at that time, I would have drafted Beasley number one. Mm-hmm. So if you think Garpax is bad now, just imagine if John Hamm was running your team in 2008.
I know. I love Michael Beasley. He was so fun at Kansas State. Oh, he was so good. I still love him. OJ Mayo was another guy that seemed like a no-brainer guard.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the Grizzlies T-Wolves trade? And I was like, what in the world are the Timberwolves doing?
Oh, I know. I know. And then, you know, unfortunately, he kind of, you know, picked up some kind of a habit that cost him dearly this summer. So, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I expected bigger things out of him as well.
One thing that's always a good pick is going to Anchor Down for your lunch or your dinner. So if you live in the downtown area, go check out Anchor Down. Or if you work in the downtown area, go there during lunch. If you are near there, always go to Anchor Down. They have great food. Obviously, they're known to be a gourmet corn dog restaurant, but I want to tell you about something else that they have. They have these hush puppies. They call them hush pups. And they have two kinds. So the first kind is this cheese curd and jalapeno hush puppy with queso. It's ridiculous. It's a great appetizer. You can even have it as a meal. The second one is a gooey strawberry fritter with vanilla sugar. Delicious. Go check out Anchor Down during games. You can watch the... Check out Anchor Down during the Thunder games. You can watch it outside. It's been super nice. The weather has been ridiculous here in Oklahoma City. So go sit on their patio, have yourself a fritter on the patio with a beer, and enjoy Anchor Down. Go check it out.
Next guy in the same tier in this Grand Slam tier, James Harden from 2009. It was an incredible pick. Another guy who was maybe even a little bit of a reach. He was in that range, so it's not the same reach that Russ is. But people are clamoring for Ricky Rubio during that time.
Oh yeah.
I have my hand up right now as people that were clamoring for him. I wanted Rubio on the Thunder. That was at the time that Bill Simmons was like a really fun guy to listen to and was on top of his game and was pushing for Rubio to the Thunder. And I was all in. And I thought that was the pick. And turns out that James Harden's a lot better than Ricky Rubio. Obviously, the other guy that you look at is Steph Curry. But Steph Curry at the time, I mean, a lot of people were in on him, obviously. But no one thought that they were going to get this. And even 2 years after, like, he's having ankle issues. It still didn't look good then. Obviously, if the Thunder had taken him, it would look fantastic right now. But yeah. James Harden as a number three pick was a fantastic pick by the Thunder organization. And if things had broken right and he had stayed, it would look even better for them. But it's still a sensational pick from Presti.
Yeah. And this is my number three as well. And I was the guy that wanted Steph Curry that year. I was sold on him. At Davidson. And then the other interesting thing, I kind of think back now, I remember there was so much chatter about, well, OKC has the three pick. They need to trade up and get the number one pick because it was going to be Blake Griffin. You know, they need to offer Jeff Green, offer the three pick, offer another future first rounder or two and trade up. And that sounded pretty like far-fetched at the time. You just kind of wonder now, you look back on that, like, would that have been so bad for the Clippers?
No.
To come out with Harden and some additional draft picks in exchange. And the only reason that was even mentioned is because Blake is an Oklahoma kid.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it's one of those. I remember a lot of chatter at the time. And no one was really convinced that it could really happen. It was just like, well, you know, Sam Presti's got to at least call and see.
Sure.
But, yeah, if that had actually went down and it would have been a, you know, Weber, Penny Hardaway sort of trade. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't have been so bad for the Clippers after all. I think that's fascinating.
Unless the Clippers took Johnny Flynn. Which I wouldn't put it past them.
not everyone is David Kahn.
That's right. Oh my gosh, David Kahn.
There's only one David Kahn, thankfully.
That's true. Oh man, I kind of miss David Kahn a little bit. He made things a lot of fun when he took all the point guards, and then my favorite thing David Kahn ever did was when Darko Milicic was like begging to get out of the NBA. He offered him like this like 3-year, $30-something million contract, and he told him, "Do not do this." He's like, "I will ruin your team." And David Kahn did it anyways, and then said a lot of like really nice things about him at Summer League. Oh man, shout out to David Kahn. I miss you, David Kahn.
Then there was where he drafted all the point guards, made a bunch of whirlwind trades, and could have come out of it with like Chandler Parsons and a bunch of other stuff. And they came out of it with like a second round pick when all was said and done. I don't know. People will come after me, but you never complain about Thunder management. And we're going through this and kind of pointing out pluses and minuses, what they've done. Like, God, look at David Kahn. And even David Kahn has got a reason for why he did the things that he did. And I understand them, but they were still bad.
Oh, they were so bad.
So bad.
We don't have a ton of bad GMs right now. Even the bad ones that are like bad for today aren't as bad as Kahn or some of these other GMs. So we need some GMs.
I look at the team. I mean, how has the team fared? Minnesota, they tried some stuff. I understand what he was trying to do, but still the team is still terrible to this day. So years after he's gone.
Yeah. They're struggling. But they're on the up and up after the Caleb trade and getting Towns. Yeah. They have luck on their side for sure.
Yeah.
Next tier. Do we want to call this the home run tier?
I have this as the home run tier.
Okay. It's tier two home run tier. I have at 4, I have the 2008 draft, Serge Ibaka picked 24th.
Same here.
Okay.
Same here.
It's an incredible choice by Presti. He was a guy that was overseas and showed flashes, but really became like one of those like first unicorn type players that could block shots and shoot from the outside. Obviously, he didn't shoot threes when he first came over. But I remember the first time that I watched him, that I was just like, wow, like he can play. Like, he's ready to play today. Because there's like a lot of skepticism around him. Like, is he going to have to go play in the D League for a year? Is he going to have to go back to Europe and play after training camp? But he was ready to play from day one. And that's why they made the Jeff Green trade, not only to get Perk, but I think more so to bring in Serge Ibaka and him to solidify himself as a starting four. He was incredible.
Yeah. And if I recall correctly, on draft night, they didn't have a picture of him. They had no footage of him. If I remember correctly, just absolutely no info on the guy. Frankly, you go back and look, and maybe you want to say DeAndre Jordan, who went the second round, but there's a reason why he went in the second round that year.
Sure.
I can't make a strong argument for, they really should have taken George Hill.
Yeah.
No, they took their point guard at number 4. If it was me, I probably would have taken Dante Green, but because,
Jared Giddens, man. Jared Giddens.
Yes. The local kid.
I like
Gotta
him.
Go get the local kid.
I guess Nick Batum would be like the only guy that you'd look at and say like,
But I mean, again, at the time, the Sonics Thunder already had Kevin Durant. They already had Jeff Green.
They did.
So
this was before like the positionless basketball where everybody plays small. Like everybody had bigs. Like remember the cream of the crop was the Los Angeles Lakers that started Andrew Bynum, Pau Gasol, Lamar Odom. And that's the team that you had to compete with for the championship. Like, you're not going to start Kevin Durant at power forward and Nick Batum at small forward. Game has changed a lot.
Yeah. And that's the whole reason why the Perk trade was made, because of all the big men in the Western Conference you had to battle and get through. Mm-hmm. So, and then, the game changed suddenly, very suddenly. I just, read yesterday Zach Lowe's piece about how Indiana got caught up in this too.
Yep.
The game changed suddenly, and they still, are kind of struggling to figure it out.
Man, that Indiana team was really good.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
That one, basically that 1 year. Okay, I have one more home run pick from the 2013 draft, Steven Adams.
Interesting. Okay.
Do you have any other home run picks?
I put Reggie here.
Okay. You're going to have to give me the argument because I'm still just have a lot of like hatred in my heart for him. It's more personal than it is basketball. So
I understand. And I know that's probably going to cloud a lot of opinions there. So, you know, again, they got a guy who's now a starting point guard in the league. They got him 24th overall on the draft. Mm-hmm. There was really no better. I mean, there was Jimmy Butler. It had been that third guard the team was looking for, part of the core, as Sam Presti talked about. So, yeah, I mean, I don't care about the way that he left or, you know, the way that he is now. But I can't fault, like, the talent or kind of like the return on where they drafted him.
Yeah, I'm going to make my case for Steven Adams being above him. I'm not totally convinced that Reggie Jackson is a starter. And if he is a starter, he's like a bottom 20 starting point guard in the league. Mm-hmm. Steven Adams, on the other hand, I think he's in the top 10 now. And I think that he has the potential to move up within the rankings of his position. I think he is a for sure starter on almost any team that he plays for, unless there's just like some crazy logjam. If like somehow the Pelicans acquire Steven Adams without trading any of their bigs, then it's like, okay. But there's no team that he wouldn't start for. I think the pick itself was a really smart pick. There were a lot of players in there, like Kelly Olynyk probably showed a lot more in college than he did. Shabazz Muhammad was like the number one player in his class out of high school, even though he didn't play that well at UCLA. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. Those players in particular, if there's one player that you like wish that was taken above Steven Adams, like the only guy is Giannis. But he was also picked at number 15. And at the time, that was thought to be just like a crazy reach. Nobody knew who this kid was. If they did watch him, they watched him on some tape of him playing against basically like me playing against like middle schoolers. And they couldn't tell if he like is like, of course he looks good, but like he's playing against nobody. That's like all the word about him. And of course, I think that you would much rather have Giannis. But at the same time, you have Kevin Durant already. And you have this team in place. Steven Adams made a lot of sense at the time, fit-wise. I think if you were to go back, you would take Giannis over Adams. Another guy, obviously, is Rudy Gobert. But he was picked – what was he? He's 27th. And this is kind of a crazy thing. He was traded. So the pick that was made was the Denver Nuggets picked Rudy Gobert, and then they sold that pick for a second-rounder in cash – to the Utah Jazz, which is kind of crazy to think about.
To get Eric Green, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Nuggets have done a great job, but that's a huge blemish in what they've done.
Yeah. So, yeah, Gobert at 12 is one that I think that would have been another one that would have blown people's minds on draft night.
Oh, yeah.
That eventually would have worked out very well. That's about the only one because, yeah, I mean, I know that the idea of Giannis, obviously, if you're fixated on draft the best player available, that doesn't always work because Giannis would come to OKC and get 10 minutes a night. I think there's also kind of a mentality, too, that always take the best player because that makes a better trade asset down the road. Mm-hmm. But then look at Denver. When they've stockpiled all these guys and none of them can really showcase themselves and some of them get frustrated. And then Yusuf Nurkic is traded along with the first round pick to get rid of them. So, you know, just stacking your roster with 15 amazingly, you know, borderline all-star talented type guys, it doesn't always work that way. You got to find the best fit. And you and I have gone back and forth in the past, man. I feel like Adams is the best fit. That's what they needed back then. He's what they need today. I went ahead and slotted Reggie just ahead of him.
Okay. But
I can understand the case.
Yeah. We usually think pretty similarly when it comes to basketball, mm-hmm. but this is one thing I don't think that we'll ever match up on. Cause I just think about like the, the era of positionless basketball where you can play Westbrook, Robertson, Giannis, Durant, and Ibaka. And good Lord, you can cover the entire floor with the arms. You can, you're versatile on offense and on defense. It's crazy. And I love Steven Adams. Like a knock on Steven Adams. Like, I love him. I like his pick better than the Reggie pick.
You just wonder if Giannis being on a, you know, mediocre team just kind of gave him the opportunity that, you know, if he was here at Oklahoma City sitting on the bench, getting shuttled to Tulsa or across the street to Reno back and forth, you know, does he become frustrated like Nurkic did in Denver? I mean, sure. That's something you have to consider, that, you know, that definitely does happen.
Yeah, that is a possibility. So our next tier, a triple, right? So that's where I have Reggie slotted. We've already talked about him. You have Adams next?
I do.
Okay. So we talked about both those
guys.
Pretty
much covered those.
My next triple is a guy that's – he takes heat. He bricked a free throw in that game followed by an air ball, Mr. Andre Robertson. He's a starter. He's one of the best defenders in the NBA. I think getting him at 26 was really good. The only other guy that you would – you know, want over him is Gobert was picked a pick later. But then you look at everybody else, like maybe you'd want Alan Crabb, maybe. But I think Robertson's has an elite NBA skill. Obviously his weakness is just so glaring that it's really easy to dismiss him. But he's a starter on most teams. I don't know. It's hard to fit him in. But whenever he is on the defensive end, you just marvel at what he can do. So I have Robertson at number 7 and in my triple tier.
Okay. I've actually got him a couple of spots down.
Okay.
And we'll cover that a little bit later. The next one I've got is Abrinas.
Okay. Yeah. That's who I have in my – I have him as my – in my double tier right next – right under Robertson. Let's talk about Abrinas.
And I think it has a lot to do with, you know, the pace and space era of today's game where Abrinas really fits. And I think we feel really comfortable with his future moving forward. The fact that they got him in the second round with one of the picks from the James Harden trade and kind of let him stay overseas and develop rather than come sit on the bench or, you know, play in the D League. You know, someone else picked up that tab while he added to his game, and the defensive issues are there. Maybe that can get a little bit better, but my gosh, he's got that elite shooting skill and some athleticism too. I mean, he's a guy that can put it on the floor, get to the basket some. You know, he's not just, I'm trying to think who's strictly a 3-point shooter in today's league. I mean, he's
Anthony Morrow,
you know, Kyle Korver. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's going to be a better NBA player than Anthony Morrow. So, anyway, that's why I went ahead and slid him up, considering where he was taken, the skill sets that he has. And so I put him in that category.
I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge Abrinas fan. I think that you're right. Like, he's at his, like, NBA floor now, which is, like, a productive bench player. And I think that he could be better than that. I think that he does have the potential to be a starter on some level. But I do think that he'll just, for the Thunder in particular – I think that he'll be coming off the bench and raining threes for a long time. He's really a smart player. He knows how to play the game. He knows how to play it the right way. So I'm huge on Abrinas. I think that he's just a tier below Robertson because I know that Reggie and Robertson are like surefire. They can start on at least 15 teams in the league. Abrinas, I'm a little bit more iffy on that. But I do like the pick at 32. Because there's not a lot of talent after him. Actually, I'm not sure that there's any talent after him in this current draft. Joffrey was 55. Jeff Withey, who's a third-string center. Ray McCallum's not in the league. Isaiah Cannon's not any good. That's it. This is a bad second round, for sure.
Yep.
So to get him was a really solid pick.
Yep.
So who do you have next? We're up to 9.
So here we are in the, this is where I drop a tier.
Okay.
And this is where I have Rob, I have Roberson, in the double territory. Okay. And the reason why is I feel like you said, he's got that one elite skill. He's going to be an all defensive player. On the offensive end, there's, I mean, other than, is he an elite cutter? I mean, an elite move without the basketball guy.
I just
have trouble identifying that second skill, not even elite skill, just second skill.
I guess transition is where he can shine some. I don't think that he shines anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, believe me, I've spent the past, I don't know how long, but especially Monday night, trying to defend Roberson's existence on this planet.
I know.
But yeah, and so it's for those reasons that I put him as a double and here right behind Abrinas on this list.
Yeah, I totally get that. Are we at 10 now?
I believe we're 10.
Okay, so my ninth player, I have Sabonis.
Okay. And he's my 10th.
Okay. So we can talk about Sabonis a little bit. He was picked 11th. And right now, he's basically all potential. I think that the Thunder obviously very much wanted him. I think that they wanted Oladipo. And they kind of, he's been linked to the Thunder for a while. But I think that their main target was Sabonis, because you have to remember that they had trades with multiple teams ready to go, not just with the Magic, but the Toronto Raptors was the first one that was leaked, and yep, they wanted Sabonis. That was their target. And they, if they could get other, they needed to get other players obviously to go with that, but their main target was Domantas Sabonis. And he's got great potential as a four to be able to shoot the ball a little bit. He's a good ball mover. He's pretty good on the block. He's just developing. Like, he's got a really all around game. He's a much better defender than people thought he would be. But at this point in time, like, I would hope that he rises up to at least like the Reggie Roberson level for me. But now I can't put him in that tier, because he's hit that rookie wall hard, and he still has shown flashes during this time, but he's got a ways to go before he can prove that he's a starter in this league.
Yeah, so this is one that I think it's probably a double, but as the result of an error, that if the scores go back later and realize, oh, there wasn't actually an error on the play, that was a triple after all. You can always go back and adjust the scorecard.
Yes, of course.
And that's how I look at it, because all the things you mentioned is why I'm putting him there for now, but clearly he's got the ability to develop. He's a lot better on the defensive end than your typical rookie. That means something. Clearly there's room to grow here. And if we do this again next year, we'll probably have a much higher opinion of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's not guys that you look at right now and you're like, man, the Thunder should have taken him. I think Juan Hernan Gomez is maybe a guy like that. Maybe you watch Caris LeVert in Brooklyn. But again, opportunity for LeVert has been able to let him shine. And these crazy numbers for Hernan Gomez in the very few minutes that he's played. He's only played 700 minutes this season, which is actually a little bit high for this particular draft class. Sabonis has played 1,400. He's played double the minutes and has had more chance to fail than Hernan Gomez has. But I don't know. I still think it's completely up in the air. And so we'll see. Because, I mean, Juancho is playing in garbage time mostly, and he's had some significant playing time. And it's so hard to tell if players are good in garbage time. I remember watching the Thunder play, whenever they were kind of at their peak, whenever Reggie and Perry Jones and Jeremy Lamb would get in at the end of the game, because those three were there at the very end of the bench. They didn't hardly play. And it was Thunder U time was garbage time. And they would look amazing during that time. And you'd be like, oh, I cannot, man, in 3 years, man, they'll be starting Perry Jones, Jeremy Lamb. This would be crazy. And it's just, you can't really take a lot from that, and you shouldn't. Yeah. So I just think it's all still kind of up in the air with really everybody in this draft class. Nobody has unless you listen to Bill Simmons about Jaylen Brown, like no one really knows like what's going to happen with this particular right. draft class. So I'm still a big believer in Sabonis, but that's where I have him slotted.
Yep.
Do you have anybody else in this tier?
I do. I have two more guys in the double tier.
Okay. Tell me who.
I have Jeff Green.
Me too. That's my next guy. Jeff.
Yep. I mean, look, he was showing signs of being a perfectly adequate NBA player.
Yeah.
And they moved him for a guy that often criticized, but, you know, basically helped transform the Thunder defense. Mm-hmm. So he's frankly, Jeff Green is a negative NBA player. If you look sure. at where he plays, good mm-hmm. team, bad team, but still NBA skill. Now, I mean, taking him fifth overall, you can go back and, you know, you can certainly criticize that, especially when they took him, even though he's going to wind up playing the same position as Kevin Durant. That's something I still never fully understood.
I didn't get that either.
But I mean, look, I don't think Joakim Noah was ever an option. I think there was probably some red flags there. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, maybe Thad Young or somebody like that. But that's still, that would have been a reach at that spot at
yeah.
five. Wilson Chandler would have been a massive reach at five. But he's going to be in the league. Like, if he makes it, if he gets another deal, which I think he probably will, he'll be in the NBA for 10 years. And not many yeah. guys do that.
Yeah.
Even lottery picks, not many of them do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you said, if you look at that draft, I mean, there was not a whole lot of better options other than Noah. And I kind of understand why probably they would not have went that direction. So obviously Noah was the better player. I think there was probably just some concerns about influencing a young team, shall we say.
Yes.
So
yes.
that they went the safer route at this point.
For sure. My next player in the next tier, which I guess is, I don't even know. I guess this is a single. I feel weird calling him that. Perry Jones, I have next. He was the 2000. He was the 20th pick in the 2012 draft. Man, I'm really. I have a lot of bad things to say about Cameron Payne. So
that's so he's actually next on my list in the double category.
Cam is okay, so he's a double still. I have Cam a tier below. I should probably have Cam, but he is above Perry Jones. I'll say that.
For
sure. Cam is above Perry Jones, but I've been really disappointed with Cameron Payne. I just thought he'd be better. Like, he should not be in the D League right now. Not many lotto picks get traded and then are in the D League, mostly because I think the players after him just made so much more sense for the team at the time, like Kelly Oubre, Sam Decker, Justin Anderson, Larry Nance. And so Larry Nance would have been a big reach, but Justin Anderson, Sam Decker, that nobody would have batted an eye at either of those guys being chosen at that spot, and Kelly Oubre, because he went a pick right after. The Thunder needed a wing. They needed a wing so bad, and they draft a point guard. I don't know. I just think that
they had Kyle Singler.
Exactly. Oh, man. I just think that we're coming up on some bad picks, but I think that was a swing and a miss from Sam Presti there.
What I'll say is he salvaged it. He wound completely. Up salvaging.
Yes. I still can't believe what he did. He definitely salvaged it.
And look, there have been young players that this season's been unfair to campaign because of the multiple injuries and being out so much and obviously being traded midseason. So, you know, I think next season, assuming he's healthy, is when I'm going to start really rendering judgment on him.
Yeah.
Because I still believe in some of the stuff I saw in his rookie season.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to wind up being pretty good. But the fact that Presti was able to not only salvage it, but like refurbish it and sell it at higher than retail price, is pretty remarkable.
It's like when my wife resold one of our rugs for $75. She priced it at that. I was like, there's no way you're going to get that, babe. She did it. Props to my wife on selling that rug. That's what Sam Presti did with Cameron Payne.
Sam Presti got a Zune, a Microsoft Zune. He replaced the hard drive in it and traded it in for a brand new iPhone.
That's amazing. I have Perry Jones and Byron Don't Call Me BJ Mullins next. Perry Jones, that pick just ended up being awful. He was highly touted in that draft, but here's the guys that were selected after him. And I will preface this with every GM misevaluated all these players.
So, right.
Jay Crowder, Draymond Green, Chris Middleton, and Will Barton, all in the second round of the 2012 draft.
Man.
That was the most misevaluated draft as like the late first round that I maybe have ever seen. Maybe the most misevaluated draft ever. Anthony Bennett went number No.
No, this was the Anthony Davis draft.
No. I'm sorry. I didn't go back far enough. 2012. Yeah, Anthony Davis.
Yep.
So the second round was just completely misevaluated. So you have like Marcus Teague, Perry Jones, Arnett Moultrie, Miles Plumlee, Tony Roten, Jared Cunningham, John Jenkins, Fab Mello, all at the end of the first round. Yeah,
for real. Rest in peace, Fab Mello.
Yes, rest in peace. And then you have, in the second round, I have all those guys. It's just insane.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, that whole, that 22 through 29 mess of picks through there is man, it's just a mess. So, yeah, you're right. This is, you know, classic example of kind of misevaluation, but yeah, we've talked about why they took a flyer on PJ on Perry Jones, so it was a worthwhile risk.
Yeah, it was for sure. So then this is I have Cole Aldrich in the same tier, and I had him as the worst one because I just thought, but then you look back and here's the trade to get Cole Aldrich: you traded the 21st pick, Craig Brackens, and the 26th pick, Quincy Pondexter, who I like but hasn't really been able to play due to injuries, for and Morris Peterson for Cole Aldrich. Like, it was a good swing. There wasn't really anybody after him that would have been just like crazy good. Like Ed Davis is pretty good. Patrick Patterson, pretty good. I don't really have any qualms with that trade. The trade I have qualms with is the Eric Bledsoe trade. They acquired this pick. They traded a second rounder. And this is where Sam Presti was Sam Hinkie back in the day. He traded a second round pick and got back the 18th pick and Daquan Cook because the Heat were trying to clear cap space. That was an incredible deal. But then he traded it to the Clippers, traded Bledsoe to the Clippers for a future first rounder, which he then used to get Kendrick Perkins. But obviously you'd much, much rather. That's where I feel like he got a little bit too cute with it. I wish he would have just kept Eric Bledsoe, because he's legit. And whenever he played for those Clippers teams, was coming off the bench, like that was like he was a monster for them on the defensive end.
And that's what I wonder about Bledsoe, because how this works, it's not like the Thunder took Bledsoe and then said, OK, who wants him? I mean, this was something. Yeah. This was something worked out in advance where the Clippers said, hey, we want to get that pick. And then after they agreed to the trade, then they said, take Eric Bledsoe. I wonder if Bledsoe was ever on his radar, or was he one of those guys that didn't hit all the metrics, you know, like height, wingspan, some of those other things, because it sure seems like he would have slid in as a backup point guard and then, you know, wouldn't have had the Eric Maynor era.
Yeah. I thought it made sense because he's a guy that you can play next to Russ as well.
Yeah.
And then also Avery Bradley was a pick later than Bledsoe. He's a guy that you look at and like, man, like how many times have people said to you, hey, how can we get Avery Bradley on this Thunder team?
Yeah.
I mean, he's good, man. He's really good.
And to be fair, because, you know, now that I'm looking at it, I forgot Maynor was actually on the team before then. So that probably took them out of the market for a backup point guard because they had Eric Maynor at the time.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Final tier, strikeout. Don't get on base. Don't even hit the dang ball. I've got Josh Huestis from the 2014 draft and my very worst pick ever made by Sam Presti, Mitch McGarry, picked 21st in the 2014 draft. He could have had Rodney Hood, could have had Clint Capella, but we got Mitch McGarry. What are your thoughts?
One quick one in the single category, I went ahead and put DJ White.
Okay. Yeah. I considered putting him on this list. He was okay.
He had a few years in the league. He was part of the trade to get Nazi Muhammad. So that worked out perfectly fine for being, you know, a pick in the 20s. Sure. So, in the strikeout list, I've got McGarry Hustis and Grant Jarrett, because I don't want us to ever forget Mr. Short Shorts himself, Grant Jarrett.
Oh man. He was horribly bad. What's his name? Last name, Brian Cook for the Lakers. He always reminded me of Brian Cook. Like a Brian Cook that couldn't play at all.
Right. McGarry Hustis, that 2014 draft, pretty much gets an F. If we're going to go back and retrograde it now.
Oh, man.
Here's what I'll say. And again, I'm not trying to put a cherry on the turd or anything like that. that was a draft where they could afford to take a couple of chances.
Sure.
Because they were coming off a 59-win team when Russ played half the season. The big addition was going to be Anthony Morrow. And you know, they had all the pieces they really needed to be, you know, the title favorite in the following season. The draft picks, they weren't going to take anybody that was going to jump in and contribute. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, they could afford to take a risk on Mitch McGarry's talent. They could afford to do this cute thing with Josh Hustis in the D League and all that stuff. But end result, neither pick panned out, you know, for various reasons.
No, it was bad. And it's hard to like dig deep into the second round and say, well, the Thunder should have taken this guy. I mean, Kyle Anderson's a guy that was picked right after him that is at least an NBA player.
I still remember Darnell and Slater going back and forth over Kyle Anderson. And then that podcast is in the archive somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, Anderson's fine. I mean, he's a fine player. He's not going to start for anybody. Jokic was in that draft. He was picked 41st. Part of me thinks that maybe the Thunder thought Josh Hustis was Dwight Powell. Maybe they just misevaluated they just picked the wrong Stanford guy, because Dwight Powell's a lot better than Hustis. Jordan Clarkson was also in that draft, who late second round pick. Nobody knew that he was going to be any good. But still, those picks are just, they look horrendous. So Rodney Hood is obviously the guy that fit for the Thunder at the time, because they still needed quality wings, but didn't take him. Clint Capella fits like that Thunder model of like this, like outrageously athletic guy, block shots, plays defense, can move on the perimeter. He fits that mold. But I don't know. The Mitch McGarry pick was surprising, and he was good. Like his rookie season, like you were like, whoa, like Mitch McGarry can play.
They got a steal.
Yeah. And the thing is that Mitch McGarry can play. He's just a big dummy. And that's the thing. That was like the most unthundery thing about it, was that the character thing has always mattered to the Thunder. And for some reason, for that 21st pick in that draft, it didn't matter, which is, it's just interesting. And you wonder if the Thunder will ever take a risk like that again after it bit him so hard. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think circumstances kind of allowed them to take that. They couldn't have afforded to do that, you know, 4 years ago. They can't afford to do that now.
Sure.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
But in 2014, it was like, okay, we've got our core team settled. We're getting ready to sign a shooter in free agency. Here's a couple of things we can try with a couple of guys we really like. And, you know, unfortunately, neither one, barring some miraculous turnaround from Josh Hustis, neither one's going to pan out.
Right. That was fun. I think
that was
Sam Presti has done a good job. Every general manager has swung and missed in the draft, but there are very few GMs that have hit three grand slams within this short of time period. So I think we always do ourselves a disservice when we compare ourselves to the Warriors or to another team, because they are also tremendous teams. But look at the other teams. Look at the other 28 teams in the league. The Thunder could realistically be one of those teams without the work that Sam Presti has done in the draft. I mean, easily. We talked about the guys that they missed on. They could have easily taken other players in the draft and been a much, much worse team. So I think that Sam Presti deserves a lot of credit for building a team that has had this long and sustained success.
And look, I mean, we could do this with another team. Like we could do this with Golden State, and we're going to point out Ekpe Udo as the number six pick in the draft.
Yeah,
the you know, pick. We're going to talk about Nemanja Nedović, who was taken, you know, like at the end of the first round. You know, they've had their fair share of swings and misses as well, but I mean, that's made up obviously by like the Grand Slam, you know, Draymond Green and Klay Thompson picks. Mm-hmm. So every team has their duds. But obviously, if you can minimize those and offset them with some grand slams, you're a lot better off.
Yeah, for sure. Even the Timberwolves, you know, in 2011, as recently as 2011, took Derek Williams second. I mean, like, these things happen. And the Thunder have been really fortunate to have such a good general manager. And a lot of people don't think he's good. And I just think that you're crazy. So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, depending on the result of the game, he's either a genius or needs to be fired. So there's no in between. The truth of the matter, San Antonio has a worse first round pick than Josh Huestis in recent memory.
Which one is that?
Livio Jean-Charles.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. I'm splicing this into the pod, by the way.
Okay. Livio Jean-Charles. Here's a guy that 28th overall in 2013. They left him overseas. They brought him into training camp, signed him to a two-year deal, got in training camp and said, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
and just waved him. So that's yeah, crazy. No NBA experience whatsoever. So there's another example of a team that swings and misses.
Yeah. John, thanks for coming on the pod today. We can follow you on Twitter at John M. Ham. We'll listen to you on the franchise. You can find us at dailythunder.com, and you can also find us at Almighty Baller Radio. Search for us on iTunes. Leave us an iTunes review. If you have time, if you like this podcast, if you like our podcast and listen to it weekly, please just take a couple minutes and leave us a 5-star iTunes review. We appreciate you guys listening, and have a great Wednesday.